Bookmark with Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Our aspirations, rather than books.
Hello, and welcome to this Bookmark special with me, Lee Chambers. We're looking today at probably the most famous poem in the world. It was written in 1928 about Cambridge, and it's taught to every single school child in China. It's the reason that literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Chinese people have visited our city over the years, with some staying to make the Chinese community in Cambridge the largest in the country. The poem and poet are also the inspiration behind an annual festival held here, and it's helped to forge strong business and cultural links between Cambridge and China. It's also inspired this piece of music, written and conducted by leading names in the field of classical music. All of these things from a poem. Yet, despite its amazing legacy, it's relatively unknown outside of China, even here in the city which is its subject. So let's hear it, translated from the Chinese and read here by myself and other voices you'll hear later in this programme. This is Second Farewell to Cambridge by Zhu Zhimou.
轻轻地我走了，正如我轻轻地来。我轻轻地。Quietly, quietly. I am leaving, just as quietly as I came. Gently, I wave goodbye to the clouds in the western sky.
The golden willow on the bank of the Cam stands like a bride in the sunset. Her reflection shimmers in the water and ripples in my heart.
The green tape grass rooted in the soft mud sways leisurely in the water, unwilling to be such a waterweed in the gentle flow of the river Cam.
In the shadow of the elm is a pool, not of clear spring water, but a rainbow from heaven, crushed and crumpled among the duckweed, leaving only a rainbow-like dream.
To seek a dream, go punting with a long pole, upstream to where green grass is greener, with the punt laden with starlight, and sing out loud in its radiance.
I cannot sing aloud now. The flute and pan pipes of parting have gone silent. Even the clamorous summer insects are hushed for me. Silence tonight in Cambridge.
Quietly I'm leaving, just as quietly as I came. Gently waving my sleeves, I'm not taking away a single cloud.
Zhu Zhimou was born in China in 1897, in a small city called Haining, situated on the Yangtze River. His family encouraged his academic study, and after studying at Peking University and marrying, a marriage arranged by his father, he left China in 1918, leaving behind also his wife and young son, to study politics and economics in America, first at Clark College in Washington and then at Columbia University in New York. Unhappy in America, he came to London and then Cambridge. Professor Alan McFarlane from King's College and a world-renowned expert in Zhu Zhimou takes up the story.
Came to Cambridge and three things happened. He fell in love. He fell in love again and again. He fell in love, firstly, with his real falling in love with a young 16, 17-year-old girl, which broke up his marriage, the first public divorce in modern China. He fell in love with Cambridge and just thought it was just so beautiful, and King's where he was. exquisite, and it was particularly evocative because it was very like his homeland. He was very homesick, and the countryside of southern China where he lived, which is a canal city, Haining, the willows on the banks and everything, it was just as if he was at home. So he loved Cambridge and had fallen in love, and he fell in love with English poetry. He'd never really been interested in poetry, so he stopped being a political economist and became a poet. And particularly the Romantics, Wordsworth, Shelley, and so on, were the people he loved. And finally, he fell in love with English friendship and society because he became a member of the Bloomsbury Group, a fringe member of the Bloomsbury Group. And so he mixed with that circle of philosophers and poets and writers, Virginia Woolf and all these people. And when he left, he decided what he'd do is to take Bloomsbury and Cambridge and England to China. So he went back, 1922, to set up Cambridge in China. And he founded a bookshop and a magazine and invited people from England to come and lecture and so on. So it became an international salon with a strong Cambridge connection. And then tragedy struck. And this is the other half of a good poet's life, that they have a tragic afterlife. He went back, his wonderful girlfriend married his best friend, and he married another very beautiful lady who became later a drug addict and very difficult. And China, which was so full of hope in 1922, in the mid-20s, the warlord period really got going. So it started to fall to pieces. And in the later 20s, the Japanese started to invade and attack it. And so China was lost, his girlfriend was lost, his hope of the intellectual and artistic enlightenment was lost. And it was then that he came back in 1928 for his third trip to King's and Cambridge. And on the boat going back from Cambridge, he'd already written a long poem called On Saying Goodbye to Cambridge on his first time. This third time, he wrote this short version. And why I think Chinese find it incredibly moving is that it compresses all this love and loss. And the last verse on taking not a cloud away from here, it's a quintessence of loss and absence. And many Chinese poems are on that theme, Mandarins leaving their home cities and so on. So it's very Chinese and very English and nature-loving. And so he is the perfect poet like John Keats. He is a Keats of China. And all this makes him so attractive, as handsome as well, and obviously a nice person. So he's a sort of role model.
And how does the poem stand out? I mean, is it a well-regarded poem?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's difficult because poets don't translate. I mean, it's impossible to capture, particularly Chinese poetry, because it's full of association. Every word, every line is alluding to many earlier poems, many either ideas. Chinese writing is poetry. It's art. The Chinese don't distinguish between the eye and the ear. A poem is not just a poem, as we conceive of it. It's also a painting. The shape of every letter, as well as things it's alluding to and the echoes, mean that those few lines can summarize much of Chinese history and art. And therefore, it's very, very strong and very rich. There are some people who say, oh, well, you know, he's a bit overrated. Some people say this is not his best poem and so on and so on. But the general consensus is that he's an extremely good poet and one of the great 20th century poets of China. I don't think there would be any doubt about that, whether he's the greatest or not. And that this is a very wonderful poem. Whether it's his best is another question. So it's very highly regarded.
So, Zhu Jimou, one of the greatest poets of the 20th century. It's an opinion also shared by Sophie Song and Zhilan Wang from Cam River Arts, a project inspired by Zhu Jimou that works with Chinese and British artists and writers.
We call him the poem of the nation in some extent, and he is present in a certain period of our history, in modern history. His poem is equal to, let's say, Keats or Shelley in England. is romantic and close with nature and show sympathy and mercy on absolutely everything, but not only human. So it's carry on everybody's dream and cherished by the whole nation.
And also the Taiwan, he become quite famous 1920s. China is in big transformation from an imperial country to a modern country. So he's one of the first Chinese poets who write poetry in modern style. That means in ancient China, you write poetry like the Shakespeare. There's very certain words, 5 words, 7 words, a very standard form. But he write in a very free style, in a modernized way. And also, in many of his works, he mentioned that in his whole life, he pursued love and freedom. So it's quite a new idea in that age. So he's very different from the ancient generation.
And he did pursue his dream and practice with it. And so in some instance, his way of life can represent over that special period of China, try to find a way of equalized, or rather follow the path of the Western democracy, technology and industrial revolution. So you can see he had ambitions at the time when China as a nation tried to find their way.
And do you remember learning this poem?
Oh, yes. It's a household poem, and also in some sense it's always on the textbook. Yeah.
And did it bring you here?
I'm not saying it's yes. This is definitely not the direct reason, but it's like a seed. It's grow in everybody's think, in everybody's body. And one day it sprouts and it grows, you know, with certain soil and air and water.
When you came here and you'd read the poem, it must have created certain expectations. Did Cambridge meet those?
Yes, especially the willows, how to say. I think the first time I came here was 2011 with my husband, of course. And I keep talking about this poet and the poem while we were in London, actually. We settled in London first. And it's all about the imagination. The imagination of the pictures and put all of these part of the dream. So because the poem itself really described clearly, there's a certain thing I'm expecting. For example, the wave of the water and the green color of the grass and the willow with the sunset. With all of this romantic sighting, it tick all the boxes, of course. And when I came with good weather, you feel like we follow his path. And actually, I'm not the single one. There are thousands and tens of thousands of me, the same dream, to get the moment to come here and make it come true.
And did it surprise you when you came here that very few people who live in Cambridge actually know this poem?
Absolutely. I thought because it's a household name for us, we thought we will be equally got the same information. And when you realize that's not the truth, you feel like maybe I can do something about it. That was part of the story, of course, where we are doing what we are doing now. So it's linked to the festivals we are organized and the events, the activities, the people we bring into this town, and the people from this town we invite them to China. He's in the middle, like a knitting, you know, thread. He put us together.
So in the past 5 years, we work with over 100 poets from Europe, from this country and from Asia. And we publish the anthology and their own poetry collection through our own publishing company. Now we have a small space. We are the only Oriental. I don't want to say we are very Chinese, because there are many artists who work with, they are not Chinese. We are the only gallery with focus on Chinese and Japanese arts in the city center, I think. We are the only organization who hosts professional tea tasting experience of China and Japan, right? Tea is like a bridge.
Metaphorical bridges were also the subject of the conversation I had with Qin Zhao Li from the Cambridge China Center. The centre connects and encourages links between businesses and professionals in Cambridge and China through cross-cultural conferences, talks and events. Qin explained the importance of the connections to me and how other Chinese organisations support the Chinese people living here.
In Cambridge, we do have many other Chinese-themed organisations. For example, Cambridge Chinese Community Centre, which was founded in 1997. Really, that's another home for Chinese people in Cambridge. We meet on Sunday basis. We organize lots of large-scale events around Chinese New Year, Mid-Autumn Festival, Dragon Boat Festival. There are Student Union of Chinese at the University of Cambridge, and there is Chinese Language School, many other bridges. But Cambridge China Center is a new initiative focusing on business collaboration between the two places.
And why between these two places in particular? Why Cambridge?
Because we live in Cambridge. This is another place we call home, although I spent really 30 years in China, more than 10 years here in the UK, Cambridge. So this China and Cambridge are the two places we call home. And really, there hasn't ever been an organization like this, like Cambridge China Center, providing constructed support to both places to enhance the mutual understanding and enhance business collaborations. When Cambridge China Center was launched about 18 months ago, many people commenting that it's strange there hasn't been an organization like this 20 years ago. There hasn't been an organization like this 10 years ago. So we are really filling a gap, trying to provide more structured, more consistent support in a different way.
There are Chinese communities in other cities around the UK. So what is it about Cambridge that you felt the need to have something that's specifically linked with China?
Cambridge is called the Chinese capital of the UK. That's comment on Cambridge News in January 2017. And then people certainly realize the amount of Chinese people living, working and studying in Cambridge. The percentage among all population is higher than any other UK cities, including London. Cambridge is very special to Chinese people in many different ways. Of course, it's the world famous university. In China, we always admire, respect education. Parents do whatever they can, trying to provide opportunity for children get better education. So we love Cambridge, the education, the culture, the history behind it. And Cambridge is very famous for technology. Some people call it the European Silicon Valley. There are lots of business expectation, collaboration between Cambridge and China as well. And it's a famous city for tourism. And another special reason is there is a special bond between Chinese people and Cambridge. That's the second farewell to Cambridge, or some translation says taking leave of Cambridge again. That's from Xu Zhimo. He didn't want to say goodbye. And second time, he wrote this beautiful work. And in the work, he described how beautiful, romantic it is in Cambridge. And this piece of work has been collected in textbooks for all Chinese students. So we have all studied it. And in every Chinese people's mind, we have a picture of Cambridge. Although most of them, 90% of them, haven't been able to see Cambridge yet. But that's kind of another dream you want to see through your own eyes.
Did you learn this poem at school?
I do.
Do you remember? What did you think when you...
some lies.
And what did you think when you were reading this poem?
It's so beautiful, romantic. And because Xu Zhimo is a very famous and he had a dramatic life experience, so it's all unique, different and stunning. And from this work, Chinese people kind of know Cambridge in their mind, in their heart, with or without coming to see it already. So that's another kind of, you have to see it to fulfill that dream.
As Chin says, the poem goes under many names depending on the translation, the most popular being On Leaving Cambridge and The Second Farewell to Cambridge. In truth, though he's most famous for saying goodbye to the city, Xu Zhimo is still very present here, not just through the Chinese people who have come to study and live in the city and the organisations formed to represent and support them, but in a beautiful memorial garden and stone dedicated to him in the grounds of King's, the college where Xu Zhimo studied when he was here. And it was the move to create this garden that first introduced Alan McFarlane to the existence of the poem and the poet.
It was in 2006 when we were approached by a Chinese potential donor who said he would like to give a stone in memory of Xu Zhimo, who had been an alumni of King's College. And the provost asked around, no one has ever heard of this man. except one fellow, Caroline Humphrey, who was an expert on China. She did know of him. The other 99 or whatever fellows never heard of this person. So I was asked, as I was an expert on Japan, I'd done some work in Japan and been to China a number of times and had friends there, could I find out more about the person and what to do? So for the next 2 years, I went through the various college committees to put something. The place where the stone in memory of Zhu Zhimao is placed is alongside Westminster Abbey, the most sacred spot in England. More people have deep associations and affections with King's College Bridge and the backs than almost anywhere else, and it's very, very photographed. So to do anything there, to sort of put up a new object in that sacred spot is something the college doesn't enter into lightly, and therefore it took quite a lot of persuasion, and luckily I was on all the right committees at the time and argued, and one or two other friends did the same. So it took 2 years, which is about how long it takes to get anything done in Cambridge colleges, if you're lucky. And it's how long it took to get the garden in memory of Zhu Zhimao made, from the first idea of it by the head gardener, Stephen Coghill. So between 2006, when I really got going, and 2008 is when I learnt about the poet.
And when Alan took me to the garden, he explained about his special role there. Here we are now with the stone. You're the keeper of the stone.
Yes, I helped the stone to get to its location. And so the donor, who is anonymous, a very generous Chinese businessman, whose name doesn't want it to be known, but he said, since you did this, I appoint you keeper of the stone, which sounds very Arthurian.
It does.
Anyway, so I feel a proprietary interest, and also I raised half the money to make the garden which goes alongside it, which has got some very nice ceramic pots by my son-in-law, as I mentioned. And this is female, yin. This is yang, male. This is a fir tree, which is a black pine, which will grow 100 feet in about 200 years. So if you're around then.
We're standing on the yang at the moment, but these individual slabs, they each have a line.
The golden willow on the banks of the Cam stand a bride in the sunset. Her reflection shimmers in the water and ripples in my heart. The rushes in the soft riverbed sway and glisten underwater. I'd gladly be a river reed, tossed by the currents of the Cam. And there's Chinese calligraphy to accompany it. So popular that someone is taking bits of it away. So we've got to replace it shortly. But it's a very auspicious feng shui because of all the water around. And I managed finally to get them to cut down a lot of the vegetation there. This is a wonderful moment. I've never seen it like this. You look through and you see the evening sun on the back of the chapel there. And you look through from this particular site and look across to his room just up in the court there, and Turing, and the most beautiful moment pool in this ancient college. So it's a very moving place, and many Chinese love, and others love, to come here. And once these trees, which were only planted a year and a half ago, grow up, it'll be a haunting little pool of China in the centre of Cambridge.
Yes, this is very, even though we've got the road not that far away, it's still very peaceful and restful.
Behind this, of course, there are all the spring flowers coming up, the snowdrops and the aconites and all these things. So it's a beautiful setting with the cows grazing over there and the reflections, which he talks about, the reflections in the willow. You can see them under the bridge, the chapel being reflected under the bridge, which is rather magical. So
Cambridge does look lovely in the slides. Easy to see why you fell in love with it, isn't it?
Yep. Indeed, anyone would fall in love with it, and people still continue to do so. I'm still in love with it after 50 years. It's my 50th anniversary of coming to this college in Cambridge. So some love affairs never end. This is one of my favourite times of the day, when you look at the back of the long white 18th century Gibbs building, and then beside it the 15th, 16th century chapel, and then to the left of it, the 17th century Clare College. Three mixtures of styles, and yet somehow fitting beautifully together. And there's a moment which probably we may not get today, later in the summer, when the sun is setting. It sets directly in a line with the west door of King's, and on Midsummer Day the sun streams straight through that door right onto the chapel, onto the altar. But it also strikes these large 18th century windows, and they begin to glow, and they go like gold plating or gold leaf. All the back of the college there is gold leafed.
And we're walking on the grass, Alan. I feel quite naughty in a Theresa May kind of way. There are big signs everywhere saying we shouldn't walk on the grass. I'm only doing it because I'm with you.
The Queen couldn't walk on this grass without a fellow. The Vice Chancellor had to ask my permission to walk across once when I went across. She said, "Can I walk across this with you?" So it's very special. And of course, no one knows anything about it, but underneath where we're walking is the best preserved medieval town landscape in England, certainly, and probably in the British Isles, because when Henry VI bought the land and decided to make this college, he just pulled down the buildings. There was a whole little town here. Pulled down the buildings and put mud over the top. Everywhere else in the country, it would have been built over, and there would be cellars and drains and all sorts, so it would have been destroyed. Here it's totally preserved. So underneath here is a church. There's a large and important quay for bringing goods from Holland and elsewhere. Mm. There are shops, there are gardens. So you have to imagine, 550 years ago, that this was a bustling little town. Mm. And now it's one of the most beautiful spots in the world.
Bookmark with Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Our aspirations, rather than books.
We're looking on Bookmark today at the legacy of the Jugemeau poem, The Second Farewell to Cambridge, arguably the most famous poem in the world because it's taught to every single school child in China. That choice by the Chinese government to teach the poem on such a large scale has certainly cemented its fame and place in the literary canon. But why did the Chinese government choose that poem in particular? Sophie Song and Zhilan Wang from Cam River Arts think they know.
I think first it's because from the literature view, it's definitely top layer of the writing. Okay, it's classic. And the second, I think, is also it's bring the atmosphere, or rather the scene of the other culture, is England. Let people appreciate the paralleled civilization is different. He also put his hometown in it because he comes from Hangzhou, which is a city representative of the ancient civilization of China, but the other hand is always on the front stage of the whole nation, also preserved like endless beautiful bridges with the willows. You know, they share the similarities. The hometown and the place he loved can be merged as one.
And he has his real love, the first real love of his life here. So Cambridge is this very special for him because very similar landscape of his hometown. And also very about his love, his real love.
When I imagine Chinese school children sitting and learning this poem, actually the two worlds are maybe not as different as we might first imagine.
That, I think, elementary idea, yeah. You grab.
Because I have been to his hometown. Actually, he studied in Hangzhou when he was a school children, but he was born in Haining. I have been to the city, and that's very similar. Small river, and not a huge river, and also willow tree and the stone bridge. Very similar landscape.
Poetic.
Yeah, very poetic.
And I asked Alan McFarlane how he thought Jugemeau himself might feel, knowing that his poem was being taught to every school child in his native country.
He'd be thrilled, obviously, because all poets want everyone to read and know about their poetry. And that the Chinese, despite the great tragedies of the Cultural Revolution and the Mao period, they have come back to really appreciating art and poetry, although it never died out. I mean, Mao Zedong himself was quite a good poet and a good calligrapher. So although he attacked high culture at certain times, he also, like everyone else, was revering poetry. But he didn't like this kind of decadent poetry. So for a while, Zhu Zhimao went out of fashion. He was a sort of not an appreciated poet during those 20, 30 years. But then he came back. I mean, it's extraordinary going to China before I really knew who he was. I used to go to really remote villages in sort of tea-growing districts of western China. You go drive miles up bumpy roads and end up in some small village and go to the local tea shop, and they'd say, you know, who are you and where are you from? And I'd say, I'm Alan and I'm from Cambridge. Cambridge? Zhu Zhimao. And they'd bring out their CD of the poem and someone reading it and so on. Everyone knows.
It seems to me it's a shame that more of us aren't taught Chinese poetry. You know, those who learn literature will learn European literature, lots of South American literature. It's not often that Chinese literature is taught.
That's absolutely true, and I think it'll change. I mean, since China is going to be the power of the middle of the century, and there are going to be more Chinese schools, and my granddaughter is learning Chinese and speaks Mandarin. It's partly also that it loses so much in the translation. I mean, French poetry does too. Every other language's poetry loses so much. So when I read his poetry in English, it strikes me as nice, pleasant, but it doesn't send a tingle down my spine. When I read my favourite English romantic poets, there are times when my whole heart and mind goes somewhere else, because I love that poetry. But with him, I just think, well, this is very nice. Therefore, I think it could be studied and understood, and some of the depth. This College of Kings has very strong associations through him and through Roger Fry, who introduced Chinese art to the West, and particularly through someone called Arthur Whaley. And Arthur Whaley was a fellow of the college, an honorary fellow, and he never went to China, but he was the greatest translator from Chinese to English, probably in the 20th century. He translated many of the great books, like The Dream of the Red Mansion, but he also produced a wonderful book of Chinese poetry. And reading that, and particularly the preface, which explains what they're trying to do, you do begin to appreciate it, but if you just read it casually, it's not that gripping.
As well as inspiring thousands of Chinese people to visit Cambridge and being the foundation for cultural and business links between China and Cambridge, Zhu Zhimao has also inspired a festival held each year in his name. Alan McFarlane and Sophie Song explain.
My young PhD student, Zilan Wang, and I decided that we would... No one had heard of him, no one knew anything about him in the college. Wouldn't it be good to have a multi-level festival which would have a little bit of music, but mainly poetry, where we'd bring Chinese poets to England, meeting them up with European English poets. That lasted 3 or 4 days and was a very large event, a big dinner, seminars on how to understand Chinese poetry and others on calligraphy. There was a big calligraphy exhibition. It was done against all the odds. We didn't have any money. But it went pretty well, last minute-ish. Over 100 guests at the dinner and so on. And it was so successful that everyone said, can you do it again? So we've done it another 4 times, and there'll be another this year on August the 8th. Because poetry is so difficult cross-culturally that it's moved more towards arts, which are easier. So calligraphy a bit, painting a lot. Chinese painting is lovely and it's quite easy to appreciate painting. And also this year probably incense, little tea festivals and maybe a tea exhibitions.
Every year we invite these poems from all over the world, represent their own culture, but all of them should be written something under the same theme. They bring there something new from their
background and identity, but the other hand is also show the respect, or rather try to, you know, express their view towards this poet's period of time. He definitely helped us, or we try to help him, to broadcast Chinese or Chinese culture in the literature part as a start.
The idea of our whole project, of which Zhuzhuma was the first plank, as it were, in the bridge, is to make the West and the East understand each other in this day of friction and mutual anxiety and hostility. The only way to avoid serious consequences is to understand how other people think in another culture and continent.
And perhaps that is Zhuzhuma's strongest legacy, the creation of events, forums and organisations whose aim is to increase understanding between the two countries and cultures and bring them together. At the Zhuzhuma Festival, the common language is poetry and art. For the Cambridge China Centre, the link is commerce and business. I asked Qin Zhaoli how different the Chinese and UK cultures are to each other.
Very different, like two planets. My husband is English, I'm Chinese, so we always say, which planet do you come from? So it's very, very different, both with rich and long history and cultural background, but very, very different. It's more difficult for UK people to understand China than Chinese people understand the UK. Because for us, we learn English as a language, we learn the culture behind it, and Western elements are more familiar to Chinese people. But opposite way, Chinese language, culture, business, development, and the society, all very different or more challenging to understand to Western audience. That's why among our members, most of them are local organizations or government or chamber of commerce or hospitality organizations or technology companies. We support them hand in hand to interact with Chinese different elements, sectors, trying to understand more and feel more comfort to move things forward.
And as well as the language, what's the biggest difference between the way companies in the UK or Cambridge operate compared to those in China?
China moves forward very fast. So I go back to China once, sometimes twice a year. So every 6 months or 12 months, China feels like a totally different world already. Some people heard about the new airport, international airport in Beijing. From start to end, it takes 3 years and 9 months, which equals to building 39 floors of a building every day. If things move forward, how you adapt to the environment, how you plan your strategy, how you run the business, moving things forward, are very, very different. But when that fast and the steadiness or long-term vision of the UK, when they come together, there are lots of culture shocks and different understandings. So that all needs to be bridged up.
And do you see Brexit as an opportunity rather than a threat?
To China market, Brexit means more opportunity than threat. Because for Chinese company, when they plan about coming to the UK or collaborating with the UK, they look at the UK market instead of the whole European market. So stay or leave the European doesn't make difference for Chinese organizations collaborating with the UK.
Zhuzhuma's poem has also inspired music, an original composition by one of the UK's leading composers, performed and conducted by world-class musicians. Jilan Wang explains how it came about.
We have this idea a long time ago, but finally I helped to raise the funding to produce this album. This album is directed by Sir Stephen Calibri, who passed away recently. This is the first Chinese album in his life, and he gave a great support to this project. In 2016, I helped to raise some funding for the King's Choir to perform in China. And then we bring Calibri to various places that related to Xu Zhimo. I think he was touched by his story. So he talked to a very famous composer, it's John Ratter, very well known globally. He's a very super busy man, right? But finally he agreed to do this for free. He writes the music. Actually, the way he writes the music is very time-consuming. He invited several Chinese native speakers to read the poetry in Chinese, so he tried to understand what's the poetry talk about. So basically, this album, there are two Chinese songs. One is Second Farewell to Cambridge. The choir performance is conducted by Calibri. So you can see this very interesting combination. And yes, we even have the first music video for King's Choir. King's Choir is very influential globally, right? But normally he only do the video recording when they do the service or when they do the performance. But we have done a music video, have kind of a little bit performance by the River Cam with the landscape of the river and the willow and the bridge. And also you can see the painting of the cover. Actually, it is done by a very famous female Chinese artist. So this is Jasmine Flower. She has the family, you know, tradition to do the, we call it Chinese, the bird and the flower. It's a special
category of Chinese painting. Asian painting. Yes.
So you can see the way she paints is in a very Chinese way, in the very Asian way, but actually the color she uses is very modern way. Similar to English and watercolor painting, look at the style, because a lot of English watercolor artists, they very much like to do about nature, about the flower, right, about garden. So it's a very lovely combination of both Chinese and English artists and the musician.
And quite a lot of pressure on those musicians, given the importance of this poem to you. Did the music live up to expectations?
Yeah, I think so. Also, you know, this Jasmine as one of the songs being recorded is like a household song for us. So each time when I go to school, and the headmaster always remind me, say, they love to teach children some easy song, easy folk song, Chinese lyrics, and with the simple tones. So Jasmine is always the most popular one because it's beautiful and everybody can grasp it easily. 好一朵美丽的茉莉花 It's just extend your imagination as a Far East country there, far away, but you feel like because of this Jasmine, we know better.
This album is very popular, has been very well received in China. So it was released in the spring of 2018. So this album has been broadcasted in the China Central TV station, the evening news, it's like the BBC evening news, in the Spring Festival. It has been looked at by about, I think, 400 million people at least. Everyone will look at the evening news during the festival. It's like, yes, the Christmas vacation time. And also, the China TV station also have a longer special report about this program. And the social media, we have the record about social media, about 40 million people view the news about we release this news. So it's very popular. And you can see the numbers of Chinese tourists coming not only to the college but to the city. Huge number of them coming here because we have done a lot of promotion for them. I think we make Cambridge more famous in China.
What's your ultimate aim? Is that your ultimate aim?
Because I come here for about 70 years, I think there are a lot of misunderstanding. Because very different country, very different people. I hope we can do something that we have common interest, you know, about beautiful thing, music, art. tea. That is what we reflect. Ceramic arts, yes.
Poetry,
yeah.
Exactly.
Everyone has very limited time in their life, so we should do something enjoyable.
And Sir Stephen Clebury himself spoke to Cambridge 105 Radio about working on the project.
What we did was, I mean, the bulk of that CD consists of music we'd already recorded that we were told would be well loved in China. But we also recorded a piece with a Chinese text, which actually sets the poem that's on the tone on the stone tablet just the other side of the bridge. And I asked John Rutter to make a musical setting of it, which he did with his customary skill and brilliance. And it had a part for solo flute and a tenor solo, as well as the choir. So we thought we'd hire a Chinese tenor to give it a little bit of authenticity, and it was great fun doing it. And the mother of one of the choristers comes from that part of the world and was able to coach the choir in the pronunciation.
Xu Zhimo left Cambridge in 1928, writing his famous poem as he did so, and he returned to China. He spent the next few years dividing his time between Peking University, where he worked, and Shanghai, where his second wife, Liu Xiaoman, a serious opium addict, lived. In November 1931, during a flight between the two cities, his plane crashed due to heavy fog. The two pilots were killed along with him, Xu Zhimo, their only passenger. In the years since his death, his reputation has continued to grow inside and outside China. In 1999, a museum in his honour was opened in Haining, his birthplace. The city also hosts the annual Xu Zhimo Poetry Festival. In this programme, we've explored the legacy he left in Cambridge on individuals and the city, and how he's reinforced Cambridge's links not just with China, but with poetry, and how on leaving Cambridge itself embodies that search for understanding, acceptance, and the things that bring us together.
I'd always thought of England as the great poetry nation, and lately, when I started writing books about Cambridge, I suddenly discovered that Cambridge is the epicentre of poetry in the English language. 7 out of 10 of the greatest English poets came to Cambridge, and I'd always thought it was Oxford where I was an undergraduate. So Cambridge and poetry are very linked up, and then to discover this poet and to discover a nation which I'd always thought the English were the great poetry-loving nation, and we produced all these wonderful poets. Poetry is perhaps even more important in China. All schools, all children learn a great deal of poetry, and poetry means a huge amount. For example, just a recent example, whenever we have a summer school or a meeting or entertain people like businessmen or academics or mayors or whatever, in the dinner that we have, there's always a time when we stop and we recite poetry to each other. That doesn't happen in Cambridge feasts, and it's just one sign of how the Chinese, I mean, we had, say, in the Anglo-Saxon period, say 1,000 years ago, I could name one, maybe two poets. Any Chinese could name 100. And there are 2,000 or 3,000 Chinese poets of that period whose work is still very widely known. So poetry and China are very, very closely associated. And by chance to have their greatest, perhaps 20th century poet, coming to King's for 1.5 years, and then the personal story of the man himself is so romantic, so extraordinary.
As in that period, it was 1921 to 1922, and the poet was really exactly came across what we are doing nowadays, enjoying the cross of between the two cultures at the time, have a second thought of digest the difference and then the mutual part. I think at that time, actually, while he was studying in King's, he also had a good relationship with Bloomsbury. And if you're talking about combine all of this literature, culture, art, what we are doing, we try to know each other more or get involved into each other's life, appreciate each other's unique part. And this is the meaning for him as a poet who came here and stayed all the time and bring us beautiful poems as we are doing now. We just extend or rather come across similar questions or problem and puzzled with them, like him. He's a media and we are the extension.
So let's end this bookmark special by listening again to that poem, Second Farewell to Cambridge by Zhu Jumeau, followed by the beautiful piece of music it inspired, composed by John Rutter, performed by the King's College Choir, conducted by Sir Stephen Clebury.
Quietly, quietly, I am leaving, just as quietly as I came. Gently, I wave goodbye to the clouds in the western sky.
The golden willow on the bank of the Cam stands like a bride in the sunset. Her reflection shimmers in the water and ripples in my heart.
The green tape grass, rooted in the soft mud, sways leisurely in the water. I'm willing to be such a waterweed in the gentle flow of the river Cam.
In the shadow of the elm is a pool, not of clear spring water, but a rainbow from heaven, crushed and crumpled among the duckweed, leaving only a rainbow-like dream.
To seek a dream, go punting with a long pole, upstream to where green grass is greener, with the punt laden with starlight, and sing out loud in its radiance.
I cannot sing aloud now. The flute and pan pipes of parting have gone silent. Even the clamorous summer insects are hushed for me. Silence tonight in Cambridge.
Quietly I'm leaving, just as quietly as I came. Gently waving my sleeves, I'm not taking away a single cloud.